Okay. Okay. That looks good. I told you earlier, it's all about contrast.
Did you have to reserve this camera before class, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay. Because we were asking Ollie's, like, hey, for Dimitri, can you set up the camera? And he's like, oh, I can't do that. I had to reserve it before class. And I was like,
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you just didn't know how to do it.
The camera is watching you. Is that what you meant, or?
No.
You mean this camera over there?
Yeah, we were trying to get this camera set up, but Ali was like, oh, you have to reserve it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, there is a certain link, but it's much more convenient than using Zoom. Because then kind of that's fixed in here and you don't have to bother with the software and sharing screen and in and out. And oh, okay. So it should work, yeah, that's good. So Dimitri is not in. Okay. Okay. Yes. Good morning. I miss this kind of enthusiasm, which you had, guys, 3-4 weeks ago. Is that due to that the backpack gets heavier and heavier? Is it that the kind of? Or adapted and get used to the normal days, perhaps. Okay. Yes, according to the plan, there is another lecture today related to human color vision. But now we will talk about population, which is approximately 1, 2, 3, up to 10, 12% who has a kind of a color vision deficiency. I think this is also important, kind of to repeat, kind of to debate, to discuss, because it's also about color and color vision and mapping and encoding, and it's also part of the research in the color lab. Okay, so previously we discussed the optical elements in the human eye and the photosensitive neurons on the retina, which are needed for normal color vision. So, but it is known that some people have certain color vision deficiency, or CVD, which is a decreased ability to see color or to perceive color differences under normal lighting condition. So therefore, the aim of the lecture is to get familiar with different types of CVDs. We learn about confusion lines. We explore different human color vision tests to simulate and methods to simulate certain CVDs, and finally also methods which can make visual information better retrievable for the color deficient. Any questions so far? So that's the subject of the today's lecture. So in the previous lecture, we talked about human color vision and what is required to have normal color vision. And we learned that generating a color signal in the brain requires cells that are sensitive to different wavelengths of light, and furthermore, a mechanism for extracting and comparing the resulting output from these cells in the visual cortex. And then we concluded that the spectral sensitivity of a photoreceptor cell is defined as the likelihood of a photon of wavelength being transformed to produce this particular signal. And finally, then, we concluded that people with normal color vision are also known as trichromats. Tri stands for three, okay? So the color vision of humans and other old world primates differ from most other animals. So primate color vision is trichromatic in contrast to almost all other mammals, which are, what is the term?
Are they monochromatic?
Some of them? Dichromats. Yeah, dichromats. So primate vision also differs from other animals, including some birds, fish, insects, which have trichromatic or even tetrachromatic vision. Tetra means four. Primate color vision is traditionally believed to have evolved for finding food. So the macaque monkeys have a similar color vision as we have with these particular peaks in the L, M, and S. Okay, what is color vision deficiency? There are many theories about evolution when it comes to color vision. And as I just mentioned, for instance, food detection is a strong explanation. Another theory suggested flowers to develop color to attract insects that pollinate them. And at the same time, insects develop color vision to lead them to the flowers. But there are variations in people's color vision. And the main difference is people with impaired and people with normal color vision. So then finally, the question remains, what exactly the visual qualities of color, shape, speed, movement, etc., evolved, and more importantly, how each of these attributes helps humans to a behavioral advantage. So these are many interesting questions, but are kind of outside of the lecture of today. So CVD represents an ability to perceive the differences between some color combinations that can be distinguished in the case of normal color vision and affects a significant percentage of the human population. So basically, color vision deficiency is the lack of or an anomaly in one or more cone types in human vision. So people with CVD can see only limited or, worst case, no color at all. So color vision deficiency is the decreased ability to see color or perceive color differences under normal lighting conditions. It is a deficiency of color vision, but not an actual blindness. So the most usual cause is a fault in the development of one or more sets of the retinal cones that perceive color in light and then transmits the information to the optic nerve. And this type of color blindness is usually linked to what? Yes. To the sex-linked condition. So the genes that produces photopigments are carried on the X chromosomes. And if some of these genes are missing or damaged, then color blindness will be expressed in men, in males, with a higher probability than in females, because males only have one X chromosome. And approximately 8% of men and 0.5% of females in individuals with Northern European origin experience the common form of red-green color blindness or deficiency. As mentioned, basically, there are two reasons for impaired color vision. So firstly, it can be acquired, meaning through the diseases or medicine or drugs, such as Plaquenil, which is a preventive treatment of a certain type of malaria, that can cause color blindness. But the most common cause of impaired color vision is an inherited fault in the development of one or more of the three sets of color sensing cones. And it can appear in certain families and are inherited by a pattern that might seem kind of special. So typically they occur in every other generation and affect boys mainly. And this is because the color defect is linked, as we said, in the sex chromosomes, and females have sex chromosomes of type XX, and on the other hand, men have XY. And since women have two X chromosomes in which the ability for the color vision exists, the color defect must occur in both chromosomes. for the color deficiency. So now if we have a look at this family tree, so the girls get X chromosome from each parent, okay? The boys receive the X chromosome that comes from the mother, while their Y chromosome, which comes from the father, has no dominance. So there might be a chance that one of the two X chromosomes from the mother have a defect. And by passing the defect X chromosome to the boy, a color deficiency can be expected. So an impaired color vision in men is also due to the mother inheritance. Okay? Now let's talk about different types of CVDs. For some people, the perception of colors is slightly reduced, perhaps noticeable, restricted, or worst case, completely non-existent. So based on these three conditions, the types of CVDs can be defined as follow. So first, it is the monochromacy, so, which is the condition of total blindness for color, where two or all three cone types are absent. And monochromacy, so mono means one. Then as we mentioned, dichromacy is the condition of partial color blindness, which occurs when one type of cone is missing. And anomalous trichromacy, which is most often the case, that's a condition of moderate color blindness where all photoreceptors are present. Exactly, but one of the type has a kind of shift, the sensitivity. So dichromats and anomalous trichromats exist again in three different types according to the missing cones or in the latter case of the malfunctioning. So there is the tritonope, deuteranope, or protanopia. So these are the cases where the first case, the S cone is missing. Deuteranopia, where the M cone is missing, or the green cone, and tritonopia, where the S cone is missing. But on the other hand, if there is just a shift in the sensitivity, also, or kind of a malfunctioning, then we talk about a protanomaly, a deuteranomaly, or a tritanomaly. So, as I said, anomalous trichromacy is the condition of moderate blindness where all photoreceptors are present. But one cone type has shifted. So the L type in the case of a protanomaly, the M type in a deuteranomaly, and the S type in a tritanomaly. So the sensitivity function of the protanomalous L cones is shifted closer to the sensitivity function of the normal M type, whereas the sensitivity function of the deuteranomaly and the tritonomaly is shifted towards the longer wavelengths. So these two are shifted towards the longer wavelengths, whereas in the proton anomaly case, it is shifted towards the shorter wavelengths. Then this table shows the percentage distribution of color vision defects, and dependent on the source, you might have slightly different distributions. So in that table, we see that protanopia, also no L cones, is 1% of men and 0.02 of women. So that means it's approximately 1 out of 5,000 females where there is a chance or a likelihood that the women can be a protanopia. Deuteranopia is the same for men, and 1 out of 10,000 females. Tritanopia, very rare, less than 1%. Then when it comes to the protanomaly, then we have 1% of men, and again, 1 out of 5,000 females are affected. Deuteranomaly, most common, which up to 5% of men and 0.5% of women. Tritanomaly, equally rare for men and women. So basically, just 1 out of 50,000 inhabitants. So the likelihood that we find such a person in Jøvik is rather low. And then at the end, monochromacy is also very, very low, either 1 out of 33,000 inhabitants, men, and again, 1 out of 50,000. So again, it's not that likely that we will find a monochromat in Jøvik. But on the other hand, if you look at the total percentage, then 1 in 12 men, there is the likelihood that we will find somebody with reduced color vision. So, if you know about football, then the likelihood in a team of 11 in men is there. Does anybody of you know that you might have a kind of a shift in one of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9? Yeah, okay. Sorry, was there a question?
How do we improve?
Wasn't that the requirement in the COSI application to have sorry, oh, I have to cut this out. I mean, the requirement to have a certain CVD, you know, that is an extra feature. Oh, I will get to that and have some stuff here, so. Okay. Yeah, there is some noise, but I was not able to figure out where it... I'm not sure that there is also a lecture room on...
It was your voice. Just after two seconds, it's coming back.
Oh, is that... Yeah, it has to be on, otherwise... otherwise, Dimitri is not... I can maybe... Oh. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So far, we talked about reduced color vision due to either missing cones or a shift in the sensitivities in one of the cones. Tetrachromacy is the condition of possessing four independent channels for conveying color information, or possessing four type of cells in the eye. And as you said, tetra means four. So it is demonstrated among several species of birds, fish, reptiles, insects, some mammals. So it was actually the normal condition of most mammals in the past. So a genetic change made the majority of the species of these class eventually lost two or even four of the cones. So the four pigments in a bird, as seen here, the zebra finches, extend the range of the color vision into the UV region. The researchers, Gabriele Jordan et al., estimate that women with four cones represent as much as 12% of the female population. So for woman one on the left-hand side, the graph shows the light sensitivity profile with one extra cone, but it overlaps heavily with the profile of the L cones. So that yellow one is an extra cone, but it overlaps heavily with the L cone. So when the cones then are stimulated in that case by light with different wavelengths, the signals in the fourth cone are not responding very distinct or different from the L cone signals otherwise that sends information then to the brain. On the other hand, the graph for the woman, number two, shows that the extra cone is placed between the M and L cone profile. So this cone is different enough from the rest, so that when the retina is stimulated by photons of different wavelengths, then the extra cone produces also an extra signal. And according to Gabriele Jordan's research, so this fourth cone is useful for discriminating multiple wavelengths, and those who have it can see, according to the researcher, 100 times more color. Then, of course, it seems that some female artist has taken advantage of the rare condition of having four cones. And somebody told me about this Australian artist, Concetta Antigo, who aims to make use of her extraordinary visual experiences by using certain extra type of primary colors for her paintings. I'm not able to see any extras, and of course color management and calibration. So, but if somebody's interested, please look at the link. Yes. Not as far as I know, at least not for humans. Other species, as I mentioned, birds. I never heard that you have a population which is able to kind of expand the visual range. But yeah, maybe I get back to that. There is another very interesting fact to color vision deficiency. This is related to monochromates. Also, a population far out in the Indian Ocean. I need to look it up. Some time ago, I had a couple of slides. So there is a tiny, tiny population where most of the people, I'm talking about 500, 600 population, are monochromates. And that's also due to the history 500, 600 years ago, when it has been occupied, and the occupants, or the leader of the occupant probably, was a monochromate, and then during several generation, this kind of, I would not say a disease, you know, has been a kind of replicated. There is also this famous book, The Island of the Colorblinds. Yeah, I have it somewhere. I need to look it up. But that was a kind of fascinating, and that still exists today. So, yeah, and of course that there has been a movie about this population, also from rather popular director. Okay, but I'm not able to. Yeah. I get back to you with that information. I thought it was a kind of fascinating. So that is the only thing I can recall, which is a kind of special. But otherwise, humans who have a kind of a wider range of visual color vision, I'm not aware of that. Okay, next chapter is related to what is called the Confucian lines. So, as mentioned many times previously, our color vision results from using three color cones, the L, M, and the S. And the theory is that by using some combinations of these primary colors, we can match, if not all, but most of the color of the spectrum. So, for example, if you choose the color yellow, as in this example, we can match the yellow with equal amounts of red and green light. And the amounts of each color, red, green, and blue, required to match the different parts of the spectrum are shown then in this graph. You remember the color matching function, which indicates how many amount of the primaries is needed to obtain a certain match at a certain wavelength. So the three color matching values can also be represented by a vector in color space. We also have seen that image. So with the three coordinates, as shown here, so the three coordinates are the values of red, green, and blue, which made that color match. And we can create then a unit plane that intersects the 1.0 unit mark on each of the color axes. So that is then that color plane, or the unit plane. And there is also a specific location where each color vector pierces that unit plane. And as you enter all the color matching values along the spectrum, you trace out a line called the spectral locus. So this line is then the boundary that contains all the colors we basically can perceive. And here is the unit plane turned face on, as known as the chromaticity diagram. Okay, in our discussion related to color vision deficiency, we presented the case of missing one of the three color cones, which will reduce the three-dimensional space into a two-dimensional space. And as an example, this is the space of the person who is missing then the red cone. And this is the line where the unit plane intersects with the green and the blue plane. In other words, the unit plane collapses onto this line, okay? Because there is no red information, then the plane is collapsing onto that line connecting the two remaining cones, blue and green. So any color or color vector that falls anywhere on that unit plane has to get mapped somewhere along this line for a protanope. So the dotted line shows how a spot in color gets mapped onto that line. And any color that falls along this dotted line will be mapped back to the same place on that green line. So any color on this dotted line will be mapped back on that certain dot. Meaning all these colors look the same for a protanope. And exactly this is a confusion line. So note in the center of the line where the green and blue are equal amounts, there is a white or an achromatic color. So that was in color space. Now let's cover the same from a different point on the chromaticity diagram. So if the red receptor is not functioning, color matching still can be done. So the red deficient person still makes matches, but not the same matches as a fully functioning trichromat. So here is the chromaticity diagram with the three primaries, green, blue, and red primaries. And here is the person without red, which is matching every color with their two cone primaries, green and blue. So for example, if we pick a color here in the range of cyan, the protanope will make a match somewhere on the blue-green line. And if we extend the line across the diagram, it turns out that the protanope will match all the colors along the dotted line as the same. And again, this is the confusion line. That's another way to visualize our map. So every protanope can see matches the color along this line. We also remember when the three primary colors were in equal amounts, then it results in white light. And now, without the red cone, somewhere blue and green are presented in equal amounts. And that, in that case, is at 493 nanometer. So for the trichromats, the blue and green generates kind of a cyan light blue appearance. For the protanope, however, the same area would look achromatic or white. Okay. So back to the chromaticity diagram. Here is the neutral point. Here is the neutral point, and here is the equal energy point. So that is the point where equal amounts of red, green, and blue produces white. So if you make a line from the neutral point through the equal energy point of white, all the colors fall along this line are perceived by the protanope as achromatic. All these color stimuli appears as achromatic. So that is then another confusion line. So we can continue to add such confusion lines that the protanope sees all the same colors. So perhaps not necessarily the same brightness, okay? And you see all the lines go through a point which is called co-punctal point. Color researchers have used this one, one way of finding the location of the missing fundamental red primary. So in the literature, you might also find different X, Y coordinates for this co-punctal point, a little bit depending on the research which has done and the authors. If the green cone is missing, the person is called deuteranope. There are two neutral points, one at 500 nanometer along the spectral locus and another on the purple line along the bottom. Different authors, as I just mentioned, give different values for this co-punctal point, and the confusion line looks then like this, according to the XY coordinates. And if the blue cone is missing, we call this what? If the blue cone is missing, what is the person called? It says there. Here are neutrals and the co-punctal point. And here are the confusion lines.
So neutral point is the point that we are trying to match the color with.
The neutral point?
Yeah, what's a neutral point?
Ah, the neutral point, that is where two lights have the same amount. That is the neutral point in that case where the red is missing. So it is the same amount in that case of S and M. That is the neutral point. So for a protanope at this 500 nanometers or 493.
Right. And that's where we extend the confusion line from.
Exactly. Yeah. For the protanope. Yeah. Then you have for the deuteranope. We have seen it is very similar, kind of. It is at 500 nanometers. Okay. Yes, that is probably an image that that you might see quite often. It's again to sum up. The three different sets of confusion lines for the protanope, deuteranope, and tritanope. And this slide shows then an image for a color normal observer and the deuteranope, and the red strawberry and the green leaves basically as a kind of schematic, the red strawberries and the green leaves. they lie on the confusion line, and then for a deuteranope it might be difficult to distinguish because they lie on these confusion lines. Okay, it's almost 11. I propose a 10 minutes break. So we regather at 12:10. Good. Any questions so far? I assume this is content which you are partially familiar with. Good.
We booked a room, but I don't know how big the room is. It has
I will let you know if it's, I don't know how many people can fit there.
How many can I do that?
Three. If four is okay, like, I don't know.
I think four should be okay.
Yeah.
I think everyone has minimum four.
I think so.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'll sit down.
I heard.
Have you had this story about that?
What?
This is helpful, you see, look at everything, could everybody even talk about trust?
Hi.
He's just reading the map of the street.
Oh.
That's why you. So who could?
Yeah.
So it's to like motivate students, like, to use whatever they have.
Mm-hmm, I understand.
So I should then, that's it, yeah?
Yeah, that's it.
Then I know, good word, everything, good word.
Do you know how to?
Well, I'm just closing my eyes, I was making a sleep in peace, I just had a nice day.
Good word, good word. And then, maybe see that, but I think I should move on to this. Yeah, but it depends if he wants this kind of, there are submissions.
He doesn't want any submission, I asked the committee the other day, and he was like, these are for you guys to like have data and to work with them, you know, would you, it's like, educational work is loud.
No, the thing is,
people take it twice the norm.
It's kind of like that, right?
No.
I typed in the exact same thing without a form, just like putting a random.
It doesn't, in that, like, in the, it's not a part of, ICC profile formation.
What?
Yeah, I mean,
This is the exact same document, you see, a pocket.
No, here we don't have any CLAC, you see.
Is it the same every time?
This is just, yeah, I can't do it now, very.
This is the exact same code, just with a.
Okay, so I can do, comparison.
Maybe not now, but.
Everybody give me their own.
To predate, just,
CLAC.
To have a.
We're getting out, right?
Function that you have written yourself in MAPPA, so that like later, for your project, you can do such a thing. And if you do it now, it would take a lot of time on you, when you're in learning. Especially when you are having 12 hours of this.
If there's something I can spend my entire day, it's really cool at one, it's like a.
Okay, so have you done your CLACs and Delta E's?
No.
Just CLAC. Because for Delta E, then first you should know which Delta E is. Is it 2000?
At this point, are we just.
Like there are different Deltas. Again, on the on the same slide.
Okay.
Color space.
Okay.
Uniform color space.
I mean, because I'm thinking like, there's this red tile, and we got this from Phil's point, and we got this from Peter's point, and as an observer, we are just trying to establish a difference. Well, I mean, just don't because the yes, and it's me.
There are too many form units.
Yes, so you're saying I should convert this whole thing into that or something?
Yes, that's enough.
So that would also complete this lab as well.
Yeah,
to get the correct value, you have to have.
Maximum support.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me see what's going on here.
would prefer vertical data because like the operator usually go vertical. So that's why I
was the first one.
So you have the then goes like this.
Yeah.
382, 780 in the row.
So
the column.
This is the wavelength. These are the.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Because like I think now when you're calculating, there must be some sort of problem.
Me there?
So if you transpose it, then it would be okay. But you have to, transpose the reflectances, and that's what that would be. That's why I usually go for the transpose when I am calculating this way. And one other thing, that you should have the dot. Like this is. Results that it's giving you, it's not the x, the maximum x, like
on the y,
Okay.
Increase or decrease?
She's
Yes. Okay. Let's move on. Yes. Now we will talk about the color vision tests, kind of very practical oriented. So CVD tests are designed to evaluate whether or not the person is color deficient and assess the type and, if possible, also the severity of CVD. So, and there are four main categories of color vision deficiency tests, which the first one is what is called a recognition test based on pseudo-isochromatic plates, ordering tests or arrangement tests. And then there is a physical device called anomaloscope, and kind of history is the lantern test. Now, in the coming slides, we will address these four type of tests more in details. So, by the way, pseudo-isochromatic, that means pretending having the same color or tint. That is the meaning of pseudo-isochromatic. The Ishihara method, developed over 100 years ago by Dr. Shinobu Ishihara, is a color vision test for mainly red-green color defects. It is probably the maze. The most famous color test. It contains either 38 plates or 24 plates. Yeah, please have a look. Don't miss this. So it shows numbers, as you can see, and other figures that can be easily read by a person with normal color vision, but it is almost invisible to people with reduced or absent color vision. So the test is mainly used to verify whether a person has impaired color vision instead of the type of color vision defect the person has. So it is important to know that this is a just very first screening test without drawing any further conclusions. But it is a very well-known test. So what kind of number do you detect on that plate? Is it?
Yes.
Okay, good. Oh, disappointing. Okay, good. If you say so. Yeah, okay. Yes. Okay, and again, coming back to the confusion lines, that is the principle. Basically, okay, where the numbers and the background is on the same line. Again, the main point I want to make here, the number is, it is choice for first screening only, okay? So that is it's important to take away. It is also the test which is very frequently used in the lab if people conduct experiments within color, asking observers, then it is interesting to know by the experimenter whether the person has kind of normal color vision. So, yeah, if you will participate in some of the ongoing experiments, then probably you will see that the Ishihara test quite frequently, or you might need to use that by your own in the cross-media course and experiment. Yes. So I can also mention a current research project in the Color Lab. So the goal is actually to modify the existing color diffusion test with a spatial component to obtain more complete and accurate data for both the color deficient and the normal color observer. So we hope, of course, in the long term that this will lead to better vision models and consequently to better visual presentation of the data for all kind of observer. Also towards universal design, so that is the idea. There is a prototype of a modified color vision test, including special feature installed, or it was installed up in the library. I had to remove the laptop before the summer holiday, so I need to get a new laptop, and then I put it back. But more important, we have an installation at the Science Center in Gjøvik. So the modified Ishihara color test vary in terms of the circle size. So this plot demonstrates the standard Ishihara test in the image to the left, and the modified version in B that extends the color so that direct edges occur. So if you look at the Ishihara test, all these circles or bubbles are a kind of standalone. There is no overlap between these bubbles. And so our idea is actually to test with these additional edges that can be created by overlapping of these bubbles. And quite interesting, so my colleague Rainer Eschbach, he is a CVD. And he used to say, give me an edge and I tell you the color. Again, we started with contrast. It's all about contrast, and an edge is a contrast. And therefore, he is able to detect certain colors, but then he needs an edge. It's quite fascinating. A couple of years ago, he worked at the Xerox in Rochester. So Xerox is, Xerox is still existing, but they had to reduce staff and research, so he got a kind of unemployed, but then he got a position here, and now we try to extend that position. Anyway, so he was here a couple of years back before Corona, and then we were down in the center in one of the parks. And then there were some kids playing with a red frisbee. So we were walking there, and I saw the frisbee, and then I saw that one of the kids was not able to catch the frisbee, the red frisbee, and it did fall into the grass. And I could see it maybe 50 meters away, there is this red frisbee. And then I was mentioning that to Rainer, hey, there is the frisbee there. And he says, where? I cannot see any red frisbee on the green grass. So then we paused there, so we approached that area, and then suddenly the frisbee was maybe five meters away, and then he was able to see the distinction between red and green. So there is a spatial component, there's a viewing angle component, so it's kind of quite complex. So it was initially his idea to play with this kind of spatial dimension, so starting with an existing color vision test and then play with that, or even instead of circles, why not try with ellipses, or try with kind of additional shape as in the sea. Then of course we hope that these type of tests is more reliable and is a kind of a new method for certain occupations. We are in touch, especially with the national what is called Kartverk. They produce maps. This Kartverk. NATS is a kind of a world leading player in air traffic management, as Avinor. So I mean, being an airline pilot or train driver, air traffic controller, it is a kind of essential that you have a kind of a good color vision. So that is a kind of the idea that if we succeed and if we can kind of show results, that these type of expanded test with a spatial component, then perhaps that's interesting. So if you are at the science center, then you will probably pass by a kind of a stand which probably looks like that. So it's kind of the science center is mainly, it's not mainly, but it is for children, youth, and families. So therefore they built this kind of very simplified keyboard where then the children can press the button. And of course for us it is interesting then to take away the results. If time permits on the next lab session on cross media, I could take the laptop with me with the test. So then, basically, you can, or we can kind of configure these plates with a certain order. So we can start with just a normal Ishihara test, and then if the observer makes some mistakes, then we can improve the circle size with more or less overlap, and then it will generate more contrast. Yeah. So that is the idea of that. Another method presented by Hardy, Rand, and Rittler. also back in the 50s, 70 years ago. It's also also uses a set of pseudo isochromatic plates containing different symbols, like crosses, triangles, and circles, used then to identify different type of impaired color vision. It consists of 24 plates, and it has with these symbols in the foreground and different background. So the hue and contrast of the confusion colors for the symbols have changed from strong to weak, so that it is not only possible to distinguish between different type of impaired color vision, but also to distinguish kind of the severity of the color vision defect. We have it in the lab. So once you're back in AO12, then we can have a look on that booklet. Now the next is this arrangement test or ordering test, and Farnsworth Mansell 100 hue color vision test, which is a standard test on testing color discrimination ability with respect to hue. So the aim of the test is to analyze hue discrimination based on constant lightness and constant saturation. So it is the hue only that changes in this stimuli. So it is used to detect regions of color confusion as well as to quantify the color discrimination ability. So the most common form of the Farnsworth Mansell 100 U test contains four distinct rows of similar color hue, each containing 25 of these chips. So this is also something we have in the lab. It is perhaps kind of more time consuming than to go through the Ishihara test. There is one thing which is very, very important to conduct these tests. What is that? Yeah, so otherwise it does not make much sense. So that is very, very important. And then, so basically so you order all these cups, so you have a starting point and you have an end point. And then you try to rearrange them in a kind of visual order. And then each of these cups, they have numbers. So then you just turn around and then you should have a kind of a continuous numbers. And then you can... if the numbers are not continuous and you end up with a very nice circle and you have, for instance, these type of patterns with these numbers, then this would now indicate that you that the likelihood is that you might be a protanope. Kind of a compromise is what is called Farnsworth D15 color vision test. It contains only 15 plates. And of course, the disadvantage is that minor color vision defects cannot be detected due to the fact that you have less stimuli. A very similar one is what is called Lantany desaturated D15. It looks almost the same, but the point is, as you can see in the picture, it is desaturated. Then again, that is for the assessment that they look like that. There is no stopping point, so you basically you take them out and then you put them on the table, and then you rearrange these 15 cups from one hue to another. And then again you read the numbers, and then you get these type of pattern for a normal observer. You have a continuous line, but then for a tritonal, you probably struggle from cup number 7 instead of going to 8. You do a kind of a visual mistake. Then that shows that you are quite likely a tritonal. Okay. They look very, very similar, so that is kind of desaturated compared to this one, okay? Maybe you know, take the cups out, otherwise if they get missed, then there is no point. Yeah, there are another one ordering test we have in the lab is this ROT 28. It's a similar test. Instead of 15, we have 28. So there are multiple commercial players with these physical color vision tests. Then, of course, you can find most of these tests also online. So X-Rite, which is the manufacturers from our I1 Pro spectrophotometer, they also have this ordering tests, and again, similar to the viewing condition, of course, the calibration and the viewing condition for the display is, of course, important because, again, it's all about contrast. Then the anomaloscope can determine whether an observer has normal ability of color discrimination or the observer has a CVD by analyzing the intensity and the mixture ratio of the stimuli. So it is even possible to determine the type and severity of the CVD. So the observer looks through an ocular on a sample field with a viewing field of 2 degrees. So that is then the test color at a certain brightness level. And then the task of the observer is to obtain a color match using primary red and green. And that at different brightness levels. Actually, we do have this anomaloscope in the lab. Unfortunately, it has not been used for probably the last three years. So, if you are interested to look into that, or feel free to give a shout, then you get access to the room and maybe. You need to update the software, I don't know, but it is there, okay? Very quickly, just to mention, the simplest form of confrontation test is the lantern test, which is among the oldest color tests and was used in England from back 1850. When the Great North Railway Company introduced a standard for color vision. So the same happened then also in France a little bit later. The tests illuminate the lights from lanterns, and One assesses the ability to see and recognize the two main colors, red and green, used in the security service, and how well these are distinguished from neutral white or yellow. Yeah, then these are just some samples of color tests on the web. Okay, the next chapter or the last chapter is dedicated to what we call simulation and Daltonization. It might be difficult for a normal sighted trichromatic person to understand how a person with impaired color perception perceives color. So therefore, color simulations methods maps colors from a trichromatic color plate to color spaces of a dichromat or an anomalous trichromat. And also you'll find many different simulation apps out there. So designers often need to check that an image or a graphic will be sufficiently clear for a CVD observer by simulating then the effect of the color vision loss. So many simulation methods project color from a three-dimensional color space onto a subset containing the previously mentioned color stimuli along the confusion line. So that is the basic idea. So typically the color map of the Deuton observer. So a number of CVD simulation methods have been proposed. Perhaps the most cited one is the one by Brettel, Vienno, and Mullen. So they published a number of papers describing their simulation, and this is perhaps the most widely used also to today. So in that workflow or color flow, you start with the RGB data, which is then transformed first into XYZ using the sRGB 3x3 matrix transformation. And then the XYZ data are then converted also, we have learned, by a linear 3x3 matrix into LMS, then reduced to either a deuteranope or a protonope dichromat perception. And then basically we do the inverse of the LMS from the LMS data, convert back to XYZ, and then from XYZ back on the display. So that is the idea, and this is a kind of straight forward. Then many simulation tools are used in the graphic and web designers to check how their work will look like for color deficient persons and identify the confusion colors. So these are example using, for instance, Photoshop. We also generated an ICC profile to simulate, which is almost identical with the Photoshop profile. So you just assign our ICC simulation profile instead of the Photoshop. So that I also can show you, or I can upload that on Blackboard, our ICC simulation profile. So for a designer's standpoint, it's very important to check. And you see this is the original tube map. So how can Protonope distinguish between the Bakerloo and the central line? It's a kind of a very poor type of design. But still, it's out there. So, yeah, not all the designers kind of respect this 5-10% of the population who struggles with the discrimination of color. Color enhancer in Google Chrome, or there might be some other enhancers in other browsers. Then simulation is important for a universal design to ensure that information can be extracted by people with normal and CBD. So this is a kind of a leaflet from a local bakery. Now the next slide, I will show just the allergy information. Gluten, milk, nuts, almond, soya, eggs, and so on. And then it says the red indicates the product contains the ingredients. The yellow indicates the product might contain some ingredients, and then the green one, the product doesn't contain the ingredients at all. So now you can imagine for CBD, a Protonope type, or even worse, for a Deuteronope type, it is not possible to distinguish between gluten and milk. So this is just rubbish made from a designer. So then you need to have other symbols, you know, like squares or a triangle or, yeah. But still, you know, this is around and it should not happen. Simulation glasses. Probably you have seen that before. This is a Protonope. Simulating how Protonope experienced the world. So when I was taking the glasses from the color lab, I had by accident this image on the screen. So this is without the glasses, then this is through the glasses. So perhaps you can check with the glasses whether this looks like that, kind of to simulate that the red is filtered off. So then I just took a measurement with the TSR, and then as a kind of what I expected, then I got kind of no light in the region of the red. Then there is the light going through between 330-580 nanometers. So in this area, the light goes through, then between 480, 530, 530. There is also no light going through, and then at the end, of course, the blue should go through. So that is kind of the principle of this very simple kind of possibility of simulating a Protonope. And that is just with the overlying of the LMS to show how this filter, what the idea is about the filter. So that was the kind of the simulation part. Then you might think, what about making colors visible for a CBD. It's kind of difficult, but again, it's all about contrast. So there is a commercial player, and Chrome glasses. Which claims that enhances color perception. So being down in the lab doing the same, this is without N-chroma glasses, and then that is through N-chroma glasses. Okay, again, color management. To me, I have to admit, kind of red colors and also the green colors appear kind of more vivid than without the glasses. For some other people, no effect at all. In theory, yes, practically speaking, yeah, you can give a try. So the point with this is kind of it has these notch filters, or I can show you that here. So the point is, I just want to make the point with the notch filter. This is a kind of essential to explain how these N-chroma glasses should work, or the idea behind. So I measured also the N-chroma glasses, and then I got this kind of profile. No filtering, no filtering. So the idea is that where you have the overlap, in that case between L and M, you should get rid of that information. So that information should not fall onto the retina. And likewise, in that area as well. And not having specific that information, that should then affect a kind of an extra triggering and emphasize both sides there and there. So again, to generate the kind of a contrast. So by filtering a certain area, it will trigger through the brain certain neighboring signals. And that is actually what then generates the contrast. That is the idea. But our colleagues in Granada, they investigated these glasses using subjects, CVDs, conducted experiment also with normal observer. And they basically concluded that they have doubts that these glasses will help. And all we know about this, what is called the effect? Placebo. Typically placebo effect. So you wear the glasses and then you might think, it should help. And but basically it is kind of rubbish. But if you believe then and you think it helps. But physically measured, there is little help. But okay, then we meet another famous chap, John Dalton. 200 years ago, he was a British physicist and chemist. Dalton is known for his studies of color blindness, which is also called Daltonism, after him. So he proposed actually the theory about the cause of color blindness. So he thought that the liquid in his eyeball was light blue instead of clear, and therefore absorbed the red light. Okay? Cyan filter and absorbing red light. So he donated his eyes to a dissection, as an examination of Tristedt, to test his theory that the color of the liquid in the eye serves as a filter for certain colors in the spectrum. And his theory had to be, of course, rejected. And DNA testing of his eyes in the 90s, 30 years ago, showed that Dalton's color blindness, deuteranopia, had, of course, genetic causes. But the name remains. So Daltonization is recoloring, is a recoloring method that enhances images so that individuals with color vision deficiency can distinguish more details, or in other words, see the image content much similar to an average observer. So the method is a kind of complex of mapping image gamut to two reduced dimension. It represents a specific type of color quantization process, as it reduces a number of image colors in accordance with deficient hue discrimination, while trying to maintain the visual appearance of the entire image. So quantization can be obtained by changing the lightness of the confusion color or changing the hue of the confusion colors. So, generally speaking, how do we do Daltonization? In the first step of the method, a simulated version of the original image is created. Then the simulated image is subtracted from the original. That generates then an error image, and eventually the error image then is added back to the original image. So in that sense, that is the original image. Then we do a simulation, as a proton simulated. Then we subtract that from the original image, and then the error image is added, which then results into the proton Daltonized version. Then, of course, we can simulate that version again, and that is then the simulation, how a proton sees that Daltonized image. So the point is, it should have more contrast than the first simulation. So that is basically the idea. As a first step, a simulated version of the original image is created. So that is the simulation. The simulated image is then subtracted from the original version in RGB space. And then the error image, so the result of the subtraction, the error image is then applied to the original image by distributing the lost information to the green and to the blue channel, because the red channel is missing. So the information then is distributed. As in gamut mapping otherwise, there are two distinct methods. We talk about content-independent method and content-dependent method. So this figure shows a typical problem with a content-independent method, meaning that all pixel values get applied the same method. So if we have these six stimuli, then in B, it's a protonopic version of the initial scheme. So that is the initial version of the initial scheme, and that is the Daltonized scheme, and then the last one is the delta, the protonopic version of the Daltonized. So the point is that in that case you have an issue, or the protonop has an issue with C1 and C2. Then you apply a protonop algorithm to the entire image. Wow, you solve the problem, but then applying the same algorithm to the entire image, you insert some other issues in some other color patches. So at the end, C1 and C2 can be distinguishable, but then C1 and C3 remains the same, or got the same, and C4 and C6 exactly the same. So it's not kind of a reliable solution. So it's a kind of more advisable to use what is called a content-dependent solution, where you use certain areas, so where you take into account the neighboring pixels, also some spatial information from the image, and then you apply separate algorithm to the separate spatial areas of the image. And then you might end up with colors which to most of us doesn't appear as natural, but on the other hand the colors are more distinguishable for the CVD. Of course, if you have these type of images for medical, then there is no natural appearance. But of course, we probably know how some of the flowers might look like, and blue flowers, or these type of blue. I don't know. To me, it does not appear that natural. So that is Daltonization. So that is still a kind of an interesting ongoing research area. And at the end, we also have some contacts with the DNT, also with the Norwegian Trachic Association. So they use currently these type of signs for their path. But then for CVD, it might be difficult to find this sign. It is there, but having a kind of greenish background, and it's a kind of difficult for a CVC to trace. So it's of course very time consuming to recolor, but it would help just to have at least these T on white background. Again, it's all about contrast. Then the very last picture is about listening to color. So he's kind of a very famous YouTuber. So he's explaining how he can listen to color. So he has built in a chip, so, and then he has a sensor, and the sensor then is generating different signals from different reflectances. And then according to these different signals, then it gives him some sounds. So he knows exactly which frequency kind of belongs to green and which frequency belongs to red. It's kind of... It was kind of interesting to listen to his explanation. So have a look at this YouTube link. Okay, that brings me to the end of today's talk. Lecture notes are uploaded, and then we continue tomorrow. I don't remember exactly its image quality and material appearance, perhaps, these two subjects. Okay.
Will you be presenting, or are we going to have a guest?
No, these are the experts. Marius Pedersen, quality expert, and David, material appearance expert. Okay?
Okay.
See you.